You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790, bringing you basically a bonus episode in between the Lakers recap and, of course, our Mavs recap after this Friday night's game. Did a little bit of rewatching the game, so we're going to talk about that and also preview the Dallas game and some of the matchups, because with the Rockets playing Dallas two games in a row, I think an actual preview is going to be of more interest than it is in a lot of matchups throughout the year. To start off, I want to acknowledge that today's show is sponsored by BetDSI.com. If you love the NBA and you want to get in on the action, go to BetDSI.com and use the promotion code ROCKETS10. You can get a free $10 wager and start winning today. Although, I hope you didn't use that to bet on the Rockets last night, because then you basically just wasted your $10 wager. But anyway, I'm bringing this back to last night, the opener against the Lakers, because I was able to rewatch it today and notice a few different things. One thing that's difficult for me is to watch the game as it happens like a scout. That's one reason why I love talking to scouts, because I know they watch games differently than me. When I watch a game live, the big story for Rockets fans and for me as media covering the team is, are they going to win or are they going to lose? So everything is framed around that context. And so it's all about the result. It's less about the process. I'm just worried about, is the ball going in the basket for the Rockets? Is it not going in the basket for the other team? And so I tend to ball watch. And while, sure, I notice a lot of things about individual players, my takes in the moment are definitely skewed towards what the result is. And I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that bias. And I need a second round of viewing when I'm not so much worried about, well, are the Rockets going to win? Is the ball going in? To actually focus a little more on the individual element of things. So the things I noticed during the game, yes, I mean, the individual observations are generally fair, but a lot of it has to do with who has the ball at a given point. And, you know, if the Lakers made a shot or the Rockets missed it, then I'm going to be a little more critical of that person. And, you know, the opposite if it goes the other way. But now I went back and watched today to try and tell a little bit more about these trends. And one thing that stood out to me upon watching it a second time, it was a very interesting game for James Harden defensively. Now, offensively, he was great, 34 points, 17 assists. I think we all acknowledge that. Of course, you'd like to see the assist total be even higher, since he had 14 of those 17 assists in the first half. But the biggest reason the assist totals went down in the second half, guys just stopped making shots. Lakers did trap the ball a little bit better, but by and large, Harden still got the ball to his shooters. They just didn't make the shots that they did in the first half of that game, by and large. Harden's defense was a mixed bag. He always gets criticism for that, and it's one of the big themes going into this year. Is James going to be a better defender? Is he committed? And there's a little bit of evidence on both sides of the coin in Game 1. For me personally, I would grade it as a C performance. His defense on the ball, and this was something pointed out by Rocket Intellect on Twitter during the game, at times it was a little lacking. There were some rotations he was soft on. There was a big three that Jordan Clarkson hit in the second half when the shot clock was going down that it should have been really obvious to James that he was going to take a three because he was lining it up and there was no time to do anything else with the shot clock the way it was, and he was not quick enough to recognize that. On the other hand, there were some real positives with his off-ball defense. And by and large, I like seeing that, because when James is disengaged, those vines you think of, when he has his true lowlights, as he did early last season and 3 years ago, it's typically because he ball watches away from the ball. And so guys beat him for backdoor cuts. And when there's a ball up in the air, he doesn't box out his rebounder. He stands and watches. I thought he was much better at that kind of stuff last night. He was very aware. What you worry about with James is him tuning it out, trying to conserve energy for the offensive end of the floor, jump the passing lane. I didn't see much of that. I saw his man-on-man ball defense lagging, but that's actually a little rare. Typically, that's something that he does pretty well. So with him just struggling in terms of on-ball defense, it's much easier for me to chalk it up to exactly what Mike D'Antoni said after the game, which was that a lot of his guys just didn't have their normal legs. And we can speculate on the reason. On this morning's show, the postgame recap, I mentioned the potential impact of all the travel, the trip to China, the jet lag, all that kind of stuff. We can speculate on the reason. It doesn't matter. But the good news, if you want evidence of is Harden buying in this year, to me, it looked like he was, because the prototype stuff when Harden is disengaged are the things that happen away from the ball, and so I thought that was a lot better. Now, as far as the rest of the team, the most glaring issue, and this is the same as watching it live, was Nene. Every time Nene went in the game, his defensive rotations were incredibly slow. The Lakers were able to punish him. One thing I didn't realize upon just finishing up the game is that in the second half, the Lakers didn't even really challenge him. Timothy Mozgov had a pretty good game, I thought, but down the stretch, he didn't even play the final 18 minutes of the game. It was essentially small ball, in which they went with Larry Nance, by and large. They didn't even feel that they had to put a true body on Nene, and they were able to succeed and have enough length and athleticism to still get rebounds, especially when it was Nene and Ryan Anderson down the stretch of the game. And what's interesting about that is that it ties a little bit into Pat Beverly's injury. The thing, when I was watching the game live, I was comparing Nene to Clint Capela, because I think we all know Clint Capela, the plus-minus numbers were a lot better when Clint was on the floor. He had 16-9 in just 26 minutes. Much better plus-minus, better defensive player, more athletic on offense, much better on the glass. And so a lot of people wondered, well, why can't Capela play down the stretch? And a lot of people tried to speculate, because obviously Mike D'Antoni has more information than we do, and it could have been a number of things. Maybe Capela was one of those guys that was really winded. Maybe he was worried about the impact of Capella's sub-40% free throw shooting down the stretch of a close game. Maybe he didn't like how Capela didn't finish on the pick and roll when he had his chances in the second half. There are a lot of issues and that could be there. Another I didn't even mention, Capela's rim protection, not exactly ideal. The Rockets gave up over 70% shooting around the basket last night, so even though Capela had a good game statistically, I'm not sure he'll grade out all that well analytically, given the amount of shots that the Lakers successfully made right around the basket. So there's a number of reasons why D'Antoni might not have wanted to use Capela. The question is, even if he did want to use Capela, why was Nene out there? And I started thinking about that, and really, if Capella's not in the mix, there, or if you want to limit Capella's minutes to 26 for whatever reason, there's just really not that many alternatives on that bench that Mike D'Antoni trusts. I've had guys on this show before that have told me that they think the Rockets' closing lineup for a big stretch of this year will be James Harden, Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, and someone. Could be Capela, could be Ryan Anderson in a super small ball lineup, could be Nene, obviously, as it was last night at the five. But basically, from the 1 through 4, Beverly, Harden, Gordon, and Ariza would be your four. And so it's a small ball lineup, but it works with what Mike D'Antoni wants to do. But with Beverly not an option, it makes it really dicey, because if you want to go small, who are you going to put in there? McDaniels and Decker are fairly young and unproven. Corey Brewer doesn't give you the shooting that you need to really space the floor. Tyler Ennis was abysmal. So in a way, I felt like the Rockets played a traditional lineup because Mike D'Antoni didn't really trust his alternatives if he were to go small. And so I think that kind of boxed him in. And so after the game, a lot of people said, well, why not Capela over Nene? And I talked this morning about, well, what about Demo if they're able to bring him back? There's another segment of Rockets Twitter saying this makes it all the more important to sign Monty Unis and have him as another option at center. And certainly it could help. As I said this morning, he's a much better defender than I think people give him credit for. And in fact, he could be a huge upgrade on Nene in that area. But the reality is, it's not just that. Ideally, the Rockets would have more options to play small ball, but I just don't feel like that they have it right now. Now, the biggest candidates, I don't think Tyler Ennis is going to get that much better, and Corey Brewer is what he is. There's just not the shooting. But one thing that was very interesting that jumped out at me today, What Mike D'Antoni said at the Rockets practice, according to Calvin Watkins of ESPN, was that he wanted to get McDaniels and Decker more involved. He wanted to get them more minutes, and he thought they'd earn more minutes. He was largely pleased by their play last night. And who could they take playing time from? I mean, yeah, theoretically they could take some playing time from Brewer, but they could also take some playing time from Nene, because a lot of teams are going to want to attack the Rockets small. One of the things that I noticed last night, the Lakers had a lot of success challenging both Ryan Anderson and Nene in terms of their side-to-side movement. You saw Julius Randle attack from 20 feet so many times because he knew that guys like Ryan Anderson and Nene could not check him laterally. Now, to be fair, Randle can do that to a lot of big men around the league. That's why he's a mismatch. That's why he was drafted so high a couple of years ago out of Kentucky. But by and large, Anderson and Nene are even worse laterally than your average big man. They're also a little bit vertically challenged with how well they can get those athletic rebounds around the basket and compete on the volleyball-esque tips. So I think the Lakers made a clear effort to challenge them, and the Rockets could have responded in many different ways. Sure, they could have played more Capella. I'm aware for right now that Beverly's out injured, so you don't have that prototype small ball lineup, and Monty Unis still isn't here. But beyond that, those aren't your only options. I think that it's just the other ones that could work physically involve either Sam Decker or KJ McDaniels, but there's just not that trust factor. One thing that I think is big for coaches in the NBA is a trust factor. And Nene, even though he's a center and we're comparing him to guys who are clearly not centers, he's been around the league long enough, he has a high enough IQ that I think a lot of coaches around the league would trust him. Whereas younger guys, it takes time. It takes lots of positive experiences going to battle late in close games to earn that trust. And I don't think McDaniels and Decker were quite there yet. So I think it's interesting to see Mike D'Antoni make that comment after the game, because it tells me that he's seeing a lot of the same thing. That it's not just a matter of, do you have a better big man alternative, be it Capella or signing Demo, than Nene if Nene gets schemed out of matchups like he was last night? It's also, can you avoid playing a big man at all? Because the Lakers clearly did not. Mozgov did not even play the final 18 minutes of that game, and Tarik Black barely did either. It was largely a small ball lineup that they succeeded with, and the Rockets, typically they'd love to play that kind of small ball, but they did not really adjust to that last night, and I'm thinking the trust factor in the absence of Beverly was a big factor why. And maybe with KJ having a good game, Decker also playing relatively well in limited minutes, you could see that start to change this weekend. I'm going to get to that weekend matchup in just a moment, but for now I do want to acknowledge our great sponsor of today's show at BetDSI.com. If you love the NBA and you want to get in on the action, especially from a betting perspective, please check them out. They're a very reputable business, been in business for over 20 years, top rated, very, very safe, great customer service, and they've got a very fast and easy setup to give you payment for your winnings. Right now, BetDSI.com has a fantastic NBA special. If you sign up today and use that promo code ROCKETS10, you can get $10 free to try their service. They're also offering a 100% bonus on your first deposit. You've got hundreds of football and basketball wagers to choose from, including live in-game wagering throughout all sorts of big games. You can even get UFC presidential election odds. They've got them all at BetDSI.com. You can play virtually anything. So if you're interested, go to BetDSI.com now. That's BetDSI.com. And use that promo code ROCKETS10 to get your free $10 wager and start your winning today. So turning to the Mavericks, who the Rockets have a home-and-home with, game two of the regular season, Friday night in Dallas, game three, the home opener, Sunday night in Houston. If you want specifics about the Mavs' side of the fence, their perspective, I had a really good podcast preview last week with Mike Marshall. He's a host with 1310 The Ticket in Dallas, also hosts the Locked on Mavs podcast. That's our sister show up in Dallas. And he gave us some good perspective about how Dallas views the matchup, their X's and O's. We did it before the Houston-Dallas preseason game last week that the Rockets won by 15. So if you go back in our archives and want to hear the Dallas side of it, that's definitely there for you. The interesting takeaway for me in terms of what we have learned since then, Dallas played a lot of small ball in their opener yesterday, too. Their opener, they lost in overtime to the Indiana Pacers, so they're 0-1, just as the Rockets are heading into this matchup. But Andrew Bogut played 20 minutes, and after that, there's really not a lot. Their bench is a little thin with Devin Harris out now. Dwight Powell played 16 minutes off the bench, and he's kind of a long and lanky power forward. But other than that, it was a very tight rotation. J.J. Barea played starters minutes off the bench. And by and large, the lineup the Mavs went with down the stretch of that big game against the Pacers was Deron Williams, J.J. Barea, Wes Matthews, Harrison Barnes as a small ball four, and Dirk as a small ball five. So the Lakers challenged the Rockets without a center last night, and I think you're very likely to see Dallas do that as well if their first game rotation is any kind of a realistic indicator. We know last week that Clint Capella outplayed Andrew Bogut when the two were in the game, but Capella, it may not just be Capella against Bogut. If Capella must have a true impact, he's going to need to play well in these small ball settings too. So how do the Rockets compete against that kind of lineup? It's interesting. Certainly you could put Capella in the middle, even if Dirk is a center, and Capella should have the range to come away from the basket. It's not as if he's a stationary guy that doesn't have the athleticism to compete out to the three-point line. The real issue is, what if he gets fatigued? Because that's something we saw a lot of in game one, a lot of hands on hips, hands on knees. D'Antoni talked about the fatigue factor after the game. And I think it's especially present with your centers because, really, looking at factors beyond just the jet lag, the trip to China, why the Rockets might be not quite ready to go as they open the year. Of course, D'Antoni's system is an extreme pace, and a lot of people might wonder, well, if the Rockets are tired, why aren't the Lakers tired too? Why aren't both teams comparably tired? And the big difference is that, well, the Rockets are always playing a traditional center in Capella or Nene, whereas the Lakers went away from that. And when you talk about a system that moves as quickly as Mike D'Antoni's does, it's the center, it's those big men that are going to have the most trouble consistently getting up and down the floor over 48 minutes. So if Capella gets fatigued, and if you don't want to play Nene, because I worry you could have some of the same issues depending on the lineups that you did against the Lakers. One thing that stood out for me watching Nene in the Olympics, he did not do well at all defensively when he was against Luis Scola and other Argentinian big men that could shoot from three. He did not want to come out away from the basket, and that's something, if he's matched up with Dirk Nowitzki or Harrison Barnes, that's going to be a problem. So this could be a matchup, if Capella has fatigue issues or if they're worried about free throws, whatever the situation is, where the Rockets do try to play a little smaller, maybe with Ryan Anderson at the five, because we know to start the game, when Andrew Bogut's at the five, the power forward matchup's going to be Dirk against Ryan Anderson. There's already going to be a lot of scouting and prep work getting Ryan ready to play Dirk. So it's very possible this could be a rare game that you slide Ryan to the five. There's going to be a lot of matchups where you don't want to do that, because obviously Ryan Anderson, not a great rebounder. He's even less in terms of a rim protector. So in a lot of matchups, he would get exposed, and I don't think it's something you want to do regularly. But against Dirk Nowitzki, if he's playing the five, that might be one of the few matchups where you can slide in Ryan as your small ball five, and then potentially have a lineup of Ariza, Gordon, Harden, and someone, one of your bench players, Decker, McDaniels, even Brewer, whoever steps up to have a big night, just ride the hot hand. But I think it's going to be very similar in some respects to what the Lakers did. I felt like the Lakers, after rewatching that game today, really challenged the Rockets from an athletic standpoint, and that slow front line of Nene and Ryan Anderson just did not react well. That's when the Lakers got their most traction, and so the Rockets may have to play a more athletic lineup. The other thing is that maybe that gives you more driving lanes in those 6 minutes at the beginning of the second and fourth quarters that James Harden is not in the game. One thing that happened yesterday, those were not good minutes for the Rockets, and a big part of it, Gordon, even though he played well, his plus-minus numbers were a little skewed because he largely played with Nene in those minutes. And maybe if you have another shooter on the floor, instead of stubbornly sticking to the center, the traditional center, no matter what, if you have another shooter, maybe that opens up more driving lanes so that Gordon can be more of a true creator in that role with Harden resting on the bench. Because really, the fourth quarter of that game yesterday, which the Rockets lost 30-18 in the fourth quarter, it looked a lot like fourth quarters last year, in that when Harden was out, the Rockets just did not have a go-to option. And I don't think that Gordon necessarily did not play well. I think it was a combination. He was a product of the parts that were around him. And maybe if you play McDaniels and Decker, you have more upside, too, because I think this is going to be a consistent problem for the Rockets early in the year, especially when you go on the road, as they are for 7 of the first 8 games of this campaign. Now, beyond the small ball issue, one thing the Mavs are going to do really well, they have 2 point guards that are playing well. Deron Williams, 25 points last night. J.J. Barea, 22 points. Combined, 47 points on basically 50% shooting. And I think everybody knows that J.J. Barea is a long-time Rockets killer. So when you have 2 guys playing like that from the perimeter, it's tricky for the Rockets without Pat Beverly, because it goes back to an issue I brought up during the preseason, which is who's going to stop the ball? To start with, you're going to have Eric Gordon and James Harden, and you hope that they can at least hold their own. Harden's on-ball defense was not great last night, as we covered earlier, but Gordon, I thought, had his moments, and so hopefully Gordon can check probably Barea. He's the more attacking of the two. Deron's largely from the perimeter. He certainly doesn't have the speed to penetrate the way he used to. But I'm more concerned off the bench, because I keep going back to Tyler Ennis, but Ennis was an absolute abomination last night. His defense was terrible. He had 4 turnovers in 12 minutes. Minus 9 in 12 minutes is pretty tough to do, but he did it. As much as he struggled offensively, I thought the defense was even worse. Lou Williams, Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, whoever you put Ennis on, they attacked him and he could not stay in front of him. And I wish that the Rockets would consider Bobby Brown. As I said earlier, I think if you're going to give a roster spot to a 32-year-old veteran like Bobby, you need to be open to playing him. But I think that may be a little much to ask this soon. I think the more likely outcome would be using more Corey Brewer, more KJ McDaniels, and having them guard the point guard. Because really, if Ennis is not efficient enough to hold his own weight on the offensive end of the floor, then I don't know why he's out there. He's not an especially good shooter. He's not really organizing the offense with the efficiency that you would like, and he's a huge negative defensively. So you're going to have some minutes that, you know, Harden's out there and he's your point guard. But if Harden isn't out there, then let Eric Gordon take that role. We've talked about using him in that throughout the offseason when Harden's not in the game, so let him do that. I don't see why you have to have a traditional point guard. Let Gordon run the offense. Brewer can be a secondary ball handler if you need, but certainly Corey, KJ, you have better options to check point guards. Even Trevor Ariza has done it in the past than Tyler Ennis, and looking at J.J. Barea, who's always been a Rockets killer, and then seeing him get off to a great start, 22 points and 39 minutes off the bench in Dallas's first game, it gives you potential nightmares if he's going up against Tyler Ennis early in the second and the fourth quarters. You need to have a solution for that, and it's hard to see Tyler Ennis being a part of that solution. Now, the upside to playing the Mavs is that they are not a very good defensive team. Gave up 115 points in their opener to the Pacers, ended up being 130 after giving up 15 more in overtime. Wes Matthews, historically, he's defended Harden fairly well, but he was 3 of 16 from the field in his 40 minutes. Never has looked quite like himself after the Achilles injury. And besides Matthews, who, again, has not really been Wes Matthews in a couple of years now, there's a lot of defensive negatives. Deron Williams' injuries have zapped a lot of his explosiveness. He doesn't really move laterally that well. Dirk still is what he is. We saw Ryan Anderson torch him, have a lot of success with Dirk not really wanting to come all the way out to 25 feet. Barea can be pesky, but he's certainly undersized, so there are things you can do if he gets matched up with Eric Gordon. So whereas the Lakers, you know, the Lakers are not as good of a team as the Mavs, but in some respects, their length made them a tough matchup for the Rockets. Dallas defensively, there are some clear holes that the Rockets should be able to exploit. So again, you've got to go out and do it. It's a game like last night where you have to make shots. The Rockets shot 24% from three, and that's not going to get it done against anybody. And a lot of those shots down the stretch of the game for the Rockets were in fact open. Gordon, Anderson, they had their looks. They just couldn't make them. You've got to make shots in any game, especially with the kind of roster the Rockets have right now. It's built around shooting. They sacrifice defense. They're spending less on defense. Let Dwight Howard walk to bring in more shooting. Just got to have those guys make the shots. So that's always the caveat. But on paper, the Mavs are a team that the Rockets offensively should be able to have a lot of success against. That's the upside. The downside is, are the Rockets going to be able to defend them? Because stopping the ball, stopping penetration, and as always, stopping Dirk Nowitzki, those are not easy things for the Rockets. So while you would expect them to do well offensively, they're certainly going to need to make some changes defensively. And Mike D'Antoni knows more than I do, but sitting on my couch, my obvious recommendations would be less Tyler Ennis and potentially a little bit less Nene as well. Anyway, I think that'll about do it for this episode of Locked On Rockets. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And you can follow our sponsor on Twitter at BetDSI. Remember, if you go to BetDSI.com now, that's BetDSI.com, go there and use the promotion code ROCKETS10 to get your free $10 wager. And you can start betting as soon as these two Rockets-Mavs games over the weekend. So thanks to all of you for listening, and I will be talking with you again after the first Rockets-Mavs game in Dallas on Friday evening.